Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today we learn about the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund. It's a program that honors Vietnam veterans whose lives were cut short as a result of their service in Vietnam, even if they are not eligible for inscription on the wall under Department of Defense guidelines. Tim Tetz is the Director of Outreach for the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund. He joins us now from Washington, D.C. Tim, welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you very much. Great to be on with you.
Give me an idea of how the memorial looks then. When I visit the wall in Washington, D.C., where do I see these other folks?
You know, we built the memorial 35 years ago. It was dedicated Veterans Day in 1982. And people and families started approaching us and saying, what about our loved one? What about those that came home and later died of illnesses and injuries related to their service? And in 1999, we created the In Memory program. It was an opportunity for the families and friends of these people who came home and their lives were forever altered by their service and in some cases died to honor them. We installed the In Memory plaque in 2006, and it is a nice plaque there at the base of the three servicemen statue on the grounds with the Vietnam Memorial. And on it, it recognizes in a very simple phrase the memories of the people who were forever changed by their service. Hmm. And so since 1999, we've inducted people into this when their families have applied and said, hey, my loved one or my friend deserves to be recognized for it. And this year we're happy to have the names of two South Dakotans being put in the In Memory Honor Roll as a way to recognize them for their service and unfortunately the illnesses that eventually claimed their lives.
So I want to talk about those South Dakotans, but first let's talk about the bigger picture of this and what it really means beyond the plaque and beyond the names on the plaque. What does it sort of say to everyone who walks by and sees those names about Vietnam, about the nature of war and its ongoing impact on people?
Absolutely. You know, there are 58,318 names inscribed on the black granite panels of the memorial. The qualifications for that were that you had to die in Vietnam or die within 120 days of severe injuries that you had received in Vietnam. So basically, the eligibility for that ended. And so for these people who have endured years, sometimes decades, of life-changing circumstances, it's an opportunity for us to realize the ultimate impact amongst the 3 million people who served in country still plagues them to this day. You know, we probably lose almost as many people from illnesses and injuries related to their service that we lost throughout the entire tenure of the war. We certainly did not envision that when we envisioned building the memorial back in 1979, and that large of a memorial would really take up most of the mall. Some families and individuals say, hey, it's about time we as a nation accept that. But this is one way for us to forever immortalize their service and sacrifice and the cost of that war many years beyond it.
There must be many who fell into a gap, who died before this program, the In Memory program, was initiated. Can people apply for someone who's already passed on, or is it someone who is passing on now?
The eligibility is basically any time after they return from in country. So they can apply. I had a grandfather-like figure in my life who died in 1980 of lung cancer. He certainly would be eligible because I can show that he was in Vietnam and he died of lung cancer. So with that discharge document and the death certificate, I can show that. And then all I would need to have really is a picture of him to go with it. And so, We'll go back as far back, and some of our honorees this year are honorees who died in the 70s, and some of them are people who died in the last year. So there's that breadth and scope of people that we're honoring this year and that have been inducted from across the spectrum of the you know, over 50 years since they returned.
Does there have to be a definitive link between the service and the eventual death, such as from a lung cancer?
Lauren, that's a great question. Many people get wrapped up in this whole service-connected VA designation. And for this program, we recognize these families and these individuals have suffered enough. And so if we've got a death certificate that shows something that is plausible to their service in country, and we have a document that shows that they were actually in Vietnam, then that's all we need. We don't need the VA service connection. We just need those two documents that say, first, you were in Vietnam or in the territorial waters there, and second, your loved one died, and these were the circumstances. And across the board, then, if they were in the military and in Vietnam and later died of these illnesses and injuries, we're ready to go.
What has, in your experience, been the impact on families of going through the process and then finally having their loved ones recognized in this way?
This is our largest and most heartfelt program and ceremony at the wall each year. And it is special because these families are finally getting an opportunity to have some healing and some recognition for what they went through. So the people, when we have our ceremony on Saturday, are really the stars of this program. We're not going to bring in a politician. We're not going to bring in a military leader who's going to be the spokesperson. It is going to be a close relative or friend of that veteran that we're inducting, and he or she is going to go up on stage with a picture of their loved one and say, "My grandfather, John C. Johnston, United States Marine Corps, Vietnam, 1968-69, and be able to have that moment in the spotlight, and the ability to be able to finally get that and out publicly, combined with the ability for 2 or 3 days you to spend time with other families who have gone through similar circumstances, brings the entire spectrum from grief to happiness to consolation that these people have been waiting years for.
That's some pretty intense work for you and your staff. How do you sort of prepare for that, to stand in that space with people every year?
It is absolutely the most emotionally tolling effort we have. We prepare our new staff and let them know, you know what, you're going to be in tears a couple times this week, and you're going to be in laughter. We're having a second memorial service for over 412 families on Saturday, and prepare yourself for that. And you know, we celebrate and we enjoy the stories, and we certainly also share the tears, because for each of these individuals, no matter how tragic their death might have come, there are highlights in their life, and there are stories that you can share and share with a smile. And when you ask and celebrate that and say, "Tell me your favorite story of your brother," or "Tell me the favorite story about your aunt," all of a sudden you get a different story, and who can't help but enjoy those?
Do you notice certain thematic topics coming up again and again, or does every veteran have such a unique story that it would be difficult to compare? Do you see themes when family members get up and speak or tell their stories?
You know, there's fortunately now a minority of folks who are saying, "We didn't get, you know, no one admitted this," because as a nation, we're now realizing the ravages of the Agent Orange and the dioxins and the ravages of war. We don't hear that as much as we used to. We hear the "thank goodness you're all here," and the "wow, this has been a journey" story more than anything. Because some of these folks were fortunate enough to carry their good health into the very, very late stages of their life. And yet others have battled for 40 or 50 years with illnesses. So those themes are underlying, but within each and every one, there is no way to say that any one of them is the same, and they're so unique. It's always great to see both sides of it. I think, you know, case in point, Danny Rozier, who's one of the South Dakotans that we're doing this year, he had an entire life outside of South Dakota, you know, growing up in Georgia and going on and serving in the military all around, the United States and getting married to his wife in Alaska, but yet his love of gardening and fishing is probably the love of many others from South Dakota, and his service and sharing of his service, just like Mr. Seavers, who we're inducting this year. I mean, they both had that underlying service in the Army that they shared together, but their lives diverged, and the commonality of both being from South Dakota is what brought them back together.
So their names, Danny Lee Rozier, U.S. Army from Sioux Falls, August 14th, 1949 to January 21st, 2012, and Robert James Seaver, U.S. Army, Irwin, South Dakota, July 1st, 1950 to September 27th, 2013. Is there an online component to this in-memory program? So for folks who might not make it to D.C., can we somehow experience anything from these stories online?
Yes, there is. There's a couple pieces. Of course, we do plenty of things on our Facebook throughout the ceremony on Saturday, and so there's an opportunity for people to watch it through Facebook Live and other places. But really, the wonderful thing about this memorial is that this memorial is epitomized through the In Memory Honor Roll, and the In Memory Honor Roll is on our website. So V as in Vietnam, vmf.org/in-memory, and that shows you the photographs of these people, and it allows you to leave remembrances of these people and to see the 18 people from South Dakota who have been inducted, and make of it what you want. I mean, we are forced to look at Maya Lin's artistic endeavor in the memorial in the way that she wanted us to, and we get to see those black pieces of granite. But each and every one of these individuals has their own memorial, and that memorial page on our website allows you to tell the story of who they are and to celebrate who they are. This program is probably our best kept secret, and that's the worst thing that I ever have to say, is because when we look at the nearly 20,000 Vietnam vets who are in South Dakota, and of which a fraction of them served in country, so many of those people who are alive today should be honored in this way. And as you said, Lauren, so many who we've lost before this time should be honored. And so I'd encourage your listeners to go out there and to listen about the stories from their peers in their midst, and figure out a way to honor their loved ones and friends through the In Memory program.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Tim Tetz. He's the Director of Outreach for the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, and the website is vvmf.org. Tim, is that also where folks go to sort of begin the process of figuring out how to be part of the program?
Absolutely. The In Memory page on there not only gives the In Memory Honor Roll, but it shows the very simple application that it takes for you to honor a loved one or friend. It is a digital application, so you can do it online. And if your listeners are a little phobic about the computer, or they know that their grandparents are never going to get into that, they can go online and print out a paper document and mail it in as well. But all of that originates at that website in the In Memory Honor Roll.
We'll put a link up on our website at listen.sdpb.org. And Tim, before I let you go, I want to talk about the Wall That Heals, the traveling wall. It's coming to South Dakota Thursday, August 10th to Chamberlain. And give us a sort of for folks who maybe haven't experienced it before, what that traveling memorial is like.
I appreciate that opportunity. The Wall That Heals is a traveling half-scale replica of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. And for 4 days there in August, we are going to bring that to Chamberlain in part with South Dakota Public Broadcasting. basically gives the people the opportunity to have a national memorial in your backyard. So a half-scale replica of the wall with the 58,318 names on there. But what the wonderful thing is, and certainly there are other traveling walls out there that people have seen, is that we are now traveling with the Mobile Education Center. Our 53-foot trailer has 3 6-foot monitors on it. One of those monitors is going to show the folks whose birthday is on August 10th. And if you come on August 11th, it's going to show the photos of those who are on the wall whose birthday is on August 11th. The second monitor is going to show those from the nearby counties and who are on the wall. And it's going to be a way for people to realize, hey, I remember that family, or I remember that he used to grow up on the farm just outside of town. And then really linking back into this In Memory Honor Roll, the third screen is going to show the names of and faces of the 18 South Dakotans that we've honored through the In Memory program. So it is an immersive experience. You get to not only see the wall, but to see a museum that we haven't even finished or started building here in Washington, D.C., and you get to experience that in the backyard. So for 24 hours a day there in Chamberlain, we're super excited to join you and your listeners and to be there from August 10th to 13th and bring a national memorial to your backyard for a wonderful experience.
Tim, with all the work that you do, one of the questions we're asking ourselves in South Dakota this year as part of the public broadcasting film with Ken Burns and Lynn Novak is this notion of what's the legacy of Vietnam in our state even today. Do you have thoughts on something that maybe goes unnoticed about how what that legacy is in America as you've done the work that you do and continue to see it in surprising ways?
I think that the legacy, I lead classes and discussions on this, and I think the legacy is absolutely within the inner stitching of what has become the flag that is America. Our legacy transcends the generations in the military. I came after the Vietnam generation, and I know that my service was easier because of those who went before me in Vietnam. And those who served post 9/11 had homecomings and send-offs mm-hmm. that were led by and spearheaded by those who served in Vietnam. Our Vietnam veterans came back, and whether we were ready to accept them as a nation or not, they came back, took their uniforms off willingly or not so willingly sometimes, and became the leaders who are at the top of their industry or the top of their fields now, or maybe just departing. And they changed the way we look at it, and they changed the way we had. And yet, last but not least, we changed the way we memorialize wars and the way we memorialize those who died in them. We never had had a national memorial to those who had fought in any wartime on our national mall. And because of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, now it's a foregone conclusion that when your war is over and when your weapons are put away, we're going to honor them and honor you. And we do that in a way, in a memorial on the National Mall. And we do that in a way that represents everyone as individuals, because every individual matters. And that is a new era that, because of Vietnam, we continue to memorialize. We continue to understand the impacts on our veterans who have returned, and we continue to realize what they can give back and how they can serve those who will come generations after them.
Would you have served if it had not been for the legacy of those in Vietnam? Was there a direct connection there that caused you to enlist or sign up?
Absolutely.
I don't know your service, but I'm making an assumption.
Yeah, no, absolutely. My uncle had served with the Minnesota and North Dakota National Guard, and there was certainly that legacy. I had a grandfatherly figure who had served in the military, and it was just, I was in awe of them. And my dad served in the Guard during Vietnam era as well. And so there was that legacy. It wasn't, fortunately for my generation, something where we had to go in a post 9/11 type call to arms. But it was one of those things of, hey, these folks who went before me did this. And there was no expectation. But I tell you, when it changed was when we went into Iraq and they said, we're not sure how America is going to receive you because we haven't been at war since Vietnam. So we're going to let you suddenly wear your civilian clothes. And yet, all of a sudden, America said there in 1990, 1991, we understand that you are one of these people who's serving and we want to treat you right. And that was an absolute transformation in the 25 years between, or not 25, 15 years between 1975 and 1990 that the Vietnam generation did for us. And I am forever in debt.
And, you know, I was in the service in 1990, and I remember when everything started sort of building up, you went searching for those people who had been in Vietnam, and you found whoever you could, and you sat at their feet and said, well, what happens next? And they were the most generous.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
and they were the ones, of course, that told us, hey, take your uniform off. You're not going to want to go through the airline. And then, of course, if you did, they were like, well, why aren't you in your uniform? We're going to push you up to business class or first class, or we're going to let you board first. And that was a new era, and that was because of those who went before us.
Tim Tetzel, you've been very generous with your time. Director of Outreach for the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, the traveling wall, the wall that heals, on display at the I-90 rest area near the Dignity Sculpture. That's in August 10th through the 13th. SDPB will be there with a special screening of the Ken Burns, Lynn Novak Vietnam War film. Tim, thank you so much for your time.